In 1933, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra premiered her first symphony. It marked the first time that a major American orchestra performed a piece written by an African American woman. That woman was Florence Beatrice Price. That symphony, number one in E minor, and her fourth symphony in D minor were recently recorded by the Fort Smith Symphony. John Jetter is their music director. He's been with the ensemble for 22 years. And he had a lot to say about this recording and how excited he is about this repertoire. This is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Elmacher. Enjoy. I'm talking with John Jetter, the music director and conductor for the Fort Smith Symphony in Fort Smith, Arkansas. John, I was looking at your credentials, and it looks like you are literally chief cook and bottle washer for this ensemble.
Yes. I've been music director for 22 years, and I think about 10 years ago, the way things worked out, the board of directors asked if I would be the executive director for, I think the idea was for just a little while. And that things have worked out differently. And then we had another staff change, and I'm also officially the development director. So, yeah, I'm very, very busy.
And you're also the personnel manager, and you have an interest in music education. I mean, you really cover a lot of bases.
Well, I think that a symphony orchestra, one of the great things that a symphony orchestra can do is give concerts, one of the great things. And I've been really interested in seeing how the orchestra does as a true community resource, being involved in so many different things. And I've been fortunate that I actually enjoy a lot of the non-musical duties. I wouldn't go as far as to say that I enjoy writing grants, although I'm getting there. There's such a tie-in between what happens on stage with what happens at, say, a kids' concert in the schools to what's happens in the boardroom. You know, it's really so interconnected. So I guess I've been able to see that a little bit more in my role doing all these different things.
So how have you been able to transform what was a small community symphony into a large, fully professional regional orchestra?
Patience and a long-range plan and terrific support. When I first came here, there was a huge interest by the Symphony Board of Directors, again, this is 22 years ago, to have the orchestra be a much stronger artistic entity than it was at the time. And that has really been a focus, that and doing all these terrific projects and different things. And we're so fortunate to have had and continue to have really outstanding community support. If you have a chance to see on our website, there are just loads of logos of companies and names of individuals who support the orchestra and have supported the orchestra for a long time. So the community is really happy with what we're doing, and that support just builds on itself. And it's allowed us to do a lot of interesting things and allowed for us to grow.
How many recordings have you made with this ensemble?
We've made four commercial recordings for Naxos.
And your latest recording celebrates Florence Beatrice Price. Why did you want to make this recording?
We had a wonderful experience recording all of the symphonies of William Grant Still, who was the first African-American male symphonic composer to be recognized as such. And Still he's really an adopted composer of Arkansas. He was born in Mississippi, but he was raised in Arkansas. So it seemed only fitting that we would move to the first recognized African-American female composer who was actually born and raised in Arkansas. So for us, this was a perfect project. And after being able to explore all of those wonderful scores that are at the University of Arkansas Library's Special Collections. It's the largest collection of her music, just 1 hour away from Fort Smith. It just seemed to make perfect sense.
Florence Price had a pretty remarkable career. Could you talk a little bit about what made her so significant?
Well, that's a good question. She did have a multifaceted career, as we all can imagine and know from reading about her. She had to deal with a lot of prejudice, a lot of negativity, her being an African-American composer, and a female, no less. Oh, my gosh. But what I think what makes her so interesting is throughout her career, her compositions are always so honest. They're so genuine. There's no pretentiousness in anything. And I think that music just, it's been able to last and able to be revisited now in a way that's it's really interesting for listeners. The response to her music has been really great. And I think so at the end of the day, it's the quality of composition, I think, that really stands out for her.
I want to talk just briefly about what led her to write her first symphony. She actually started off studying at the New England Conservatory, and I think about this, as you mentioned, she was a woman of color, but she was a woman at the turn of the 20th century when women were probably not really that encouraged to be doing this type of thing. She studied under George Whitefield Chadwick, among others. Then she moved to Chicago. Why did she move to Chicago?
Life for her was excellent in Little Rock for a while. And then she went off to school, and I think she went back to Little Rock. But Arkansas had changed. It wasn't as open, believe it or not, as it had been previously. And she wanted to move north. She wanted to be somewhere where she thought was a little more progressive. And then, of course, there was a competition for new music that she won, and the prize was having her first symphony performed by the Chicago Symphony, which was a huge deal. And that was really her first big recognition. And historically, that's one of the reasons for where she is she was that she was, had that first opportunity for a woman of color to have a major orchestra perform a piece of hers.
Let's talk a little bit about the Symphony No. 1 in E minor. Can you help me just walk through the four movements of this symphony? What do we hear when the symphony starts out?
Well, there's no question that the symphonies pay a huge debt. Their basis is in the Austro-Germanic tradition. There's no question about it. That's the bedrock. So we do have a four-movement symphony. The first movement is sort of a traditional sonata movement without going into all the details, but this idea of having, you know, a group of themes that are presented and then developed and then come back at the end. That's a very traditional Austro-Germanic form. A beautiful slow movement, which is again a traditional symphonic idea, a sort of a simple song idea. There's no question that that second movement is, we're at a revival meeting. There's no question about it. Hearing this brass chorale that's repeated over and over again, it becomes almost hypnotic. The third movement is perhaps the most specific or most characteristic of Price. The third movement in a typical Austro-Germanic symphony would be a scherzo, kind of a serious, angst-ridden dance. And in her case, she writes a juba dance, which is an African slave dance. It's sort of related to the hambone, which is a dance with music performed with body percussion. So it's sort of this quirky dance idea, very happy, very upbeat, a fun, almost funny sort of movement. Symphonic slide whistle, how often do you hear that? People are supposed to listen to that and go, what? You know, what instrument is that? That's in a symphony? Yeah, that's the idea. And then her finale is rather driven, almost tarantella-like. Similar to the last movement of the Mendelssohn Italian Symphony. And I keep saying there are all these similarities with Austro-Germanic music. This, however, is totally about the American experience. There's a lot of blues-infused music. Definitely an influence of a revival meeting of hymns. And in this symphony, there's definitely, it's kind of about the rural American experience, if you will. She also likes to use the pentatonic scale, which gives the music a little bit more ambiguity. It's a five-note scale. A lot of recent press has talked about the similarities with her music to Dvorak. There are moments, I don't hear that as much as a lot of people say. There are some movements where, yes, there's a huge debt to it. And obviously she had heard Dvorak's New World Symphony. But there's definitely a style that's all her own.
Do you think that maybe she was being compared to Dvorak, or said that she was influenced by him because of what he did when he came to America, where he blended what he knew from his homeland with what he was learning while he was in America, while he was in the United States. And she was doing something sort of similar, taking spirituals and dance music that she knew from her roots?
Oh, I think so. You know, Dvorak came and, of course, he was totally steeped in the European tradition, and he came to America and thought, oh, wow, listen to all this terrific native music, folk music. I'm going to try to incorporate it. And she was trained in that same tradition as he. But she wanted to have that American experience in her music. So there's no question why there wouldn't be, you know, some sort of connection to Dvorak, at the very least in that way. There's a huge debt to the blues and rather complex blues chords. Your typical chord has three notes, maybe four, maybe five. She's going way up the chordal scale in using notes that maybe when you first hear it or when you first play it, you think, oh, that's not right. That's not part of the chord. Well, it turns out it's the 15th of a chord, of like a jazz or a blues chord.
In the Fourth Symphony, one of the things I love about that is the recurring melody of the spiritual wade in the water.
Yes, yeah, the first movement. Yeah, almost from the beginning. And there you go. There's a perfect example. I'm sure she was thinking, what's going to be my reference for the symphony? How can I tie this into America's past? Yeah, she does a masterful job. And the final scherzo, it's funny, I was saying earlier that she doesn't write scherzos. Actually, in the Fourth Symphony, the last movement is a scherzo. It's this driven, happy movement, but some really strange harmonies. These sudden loud chords. I think she played the organ, and I think you hear that a lot in the Fourth Symphony. These complex chords, vertically built up chords, something that you would do playing the organ.
John, as you were putting this recording together, what was most memorable for you?
Oh, that's a good question, because everyone involved in the project was they were all really up for the idea and loved the idea. So there was, I guess, my favorite part was there was all so much positive energy around it. There was nothing like, oh, well, maybe we shouldn't do it. Or, you know, everyone thought, oh, this is terrific. So that made it a lot of fun. You know, I respect, of course, all the big guys, the Mahlers and the Tchaikovskys and the Brahms. We need to perform those. But, you know, we need to get past those same 50 pieces. And you just see them in concert halls over and over and over again. And I'm just thrilled. I hope that people will not only enjoy this recording, but I hope that it helps that dialogue that we have more and more about. Maybe we can expand the repertoire a little bit. Because I can tell you, my experience with Price and William Grant Still is the audience absolutely loves the music. I think performing some of this music is just terrific. I think it's something everyone should be doing.
John Jetter with the Fort Smith Symphony, talking about their new recording featuring the First and Fourth Symphony by Florence Price. That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julie Amacher.